This is an original podcast from The Costry, the newest podcast people on the podcast block. Please be entertained or educated or both.
Welcome back to The Business of People. Very, very special thanks to The Costry, who are now the hosts of our podcast. So thanks very much, guys. Doing an amazing job. Please go check out thecastry.fm for all the exciting shows. And subscribe, share, follow. So for today's Business of People, I sat down with Eloa, a digital nomad, I think you can call her, or if you had to put her in a category, I guess, who stumbled into Cape Town office and we got into a conversation and she told me about this very fascinating thing. Now, as someone who has been living, breathing the co-working life and all things community for 10 years, my ears naturally pricked up when she said that she's involved in a thing. She started a thing called co-loving. You'll be disappointed, some of you, to know that I'm not referring to something pornographic here, but check out the episode, have a listen. We sat down, had a conversation about co-loving, what it means, how it works, how it came about, and give us your thoughts, send us a message, either, comment on the Facebook page or send us an email. Would love to know. Eloa would also, and I'll post all of those links, obviously, and Eloa would also love to hear from you if you have any interest in joining. So sit back, enjoy whatever you're doing, and please remember to like, share, and subscribe. It's been a while, and I'm so tired of apologizing, so I'm not going to do that anymore. It's been a while. It's been an interesting time, and I'm very excited to be sat here with Eloa. Welcome.
Thank you.
And we're going to talk about a whole bunch of interesting things, and I think very relevant things. They're just part of the business of people, but also a very useful, I think, and life-changing subject that I think a lot of us need to get stuck into. So I'm not going to even try and pronounce your surname. You're Brazilian, so I'm going to let you do that.
All right. Yeah, so it's Eloa Paes Ramalho.
Why? Okay. I'm not going to repeat that.
That's how it goes.
That's so beautiful, though.
That's in Portuguese for you.
Yes. I went to Portugal in 2019. Did I mention that?
No, you didn't.
Yeah. It was like, it was one of those fortuitous things. I'd heard all these wonderful things about Portugal. And then the opportunity came up to see one of my favorite all-time bands. They were playing at the university in Lisbon. And so it was just like spur of the moment, book tickets, let's go, with Angolan Airways. And that was exciting.
Okay, so, getting all the different Portuguese accents there.
Oh my God. The dialects and all sorts. Yeah. Have you flown with them? Have you flown that way? Because they do direct flights to Brazil, I believe, as well.
I think I have. But like what comes to mind when you talk about that is my first time flying to Portugal, actually. I couldn't understand a single thing about the accent. I actually waited. No, actually, they were like, come on, it's the same language, you know. But I actually waited until they would speak in English the instructions because I was like, I have no idea what these guys are saying.
Really? Is it that different?
I think it takes some time to adjust and then you can pick it up.
Yeah, I suppose it's like the Franco sort of African countries and also going to France for the first time. I think the dialect must be quite different there too.
Hmm.
So you've been in Cape Town, what, 6 years, you said?
Almost, January. It's
that's amazing. You know you'll never be a local here in Cape Town. You can be here for like 90 years and Cape Townians will say, how long have you been here? 90 years? Yeah, you're not Cape Townian. No, I'm joking.
The thing is like right now I don't belong anywhere. You know, like when people ask me where I'm from, I just think I'm from this weird place, you know, that has features from Sweden and England and Cape Town and Brazil and my accent sounds like that, right? So it's hard also for people to see.
Yeah, it's hard to pinpoint.
Exactly.
No doubt. But that's a good thing. It's a good conversation starter, if nothing else.
Yeah. It's still a traveler in Cape Town, so that's exciting.
So do you put yourself in the digital nomad section of things, or?
I would possibly.
If one was to categorize.
Yeah, like I haven't been moving around that much lately, so I think that's a little bit of cheating.
Well, we've had a pandemic to contend with the last year and a half, so I think for the last year and a half, you can put that aside. Put it aside.
I think, in a way, yes. Like, I do like roaming and wandering. But there are a few places in the world that I feel very called to. And Cape Town is one, San Francisco is another one. And yeah, I have a little love affair with Greece that I haven't still figured out. But so I think, yeah, there are like some points in nature and cities that I feel very at home with.
Mm.
So we were talking earlier about, you know, home is where the Wi-Fi logs in
automatically. Yeah, exactly.
But I think it's also, yeah, it's also a feeling of recognition. Like sometimes I get to a new place, and that's how it was with Cape Town. Like I arrived here, and even though it was completely strange and unique, it just felt like it was my nature. Like this is where I belong.
Most people point to that big rock behind us, the thing called Table Mountain, and they go, that's why. There's a lot of people put the magic right there in that rock. And yeah, interesting. So I dug around your websites, and I'm very excited to talk about that. So the work you do, I thought about how I would, and I just think you're a happiness agent. I think you're just
I love that.
Right?
I'll take it.
Yeah. So why don't you explain to those who are listening, and thank you for listening, by the way. Why don't you explain, if you can, in a few sentences, what it is that you do?
Yeah, I think, like I say it in a few different ways. The one way would be like supporting people to develop an immunity to peer pressure. And the other one is, I don't know, like living your most incredible love life with yourself. So yeah, it's just, I think daring to go places that scare us, daring to live a life that nobody else understands.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. Being in love with yourself, now that's a challenge, right? And I think for most of us, we look in the mirror and it's like, no, don't, you know.
Yeah.
It's much easier, right? I mean, I think it is much easier to look at the reflections, which are your friends, your peers in those groups, and find the good things and the things that we are attracted to versus looking in the mirror. I read, I don't know if you're familiar with Louise Hay. So she wrote many, many books, and You Can Heal Your Life was probably one of the best-selling books that she ever wrote. And one of the challenges or one of the exercises in that book is literally to look at yourself in the mirror and, you know, with meaning, sort of look back at the reflection and truly express love for the reflection looking back at you. And it's hard.
Mm.
It's hard. So talk to me. So this takes the form of what? Coaching? You sit down, is it one-on-one, or do you do it with groups, or what do you do?
Yeah, right now I have private clients, private coaching, and I also have a co-loving community. So,
Tell me more.
So the idea is
this is not
together.
Porn, ladies and gentlemen. We're not talking about porn here, yes?
I know, people can take things that way too.
Well, it's like fuck-up nights, right? Yeah, exactly.
It is, I think the idea is that self-love doesn't need to be done alone. So gathering a collective of people that are interested in discovering what that journey is. So I think for myself, I felt extremely lonely and the first time somebody told me I had to love myself. You know, like I was 20-something, my early 20s in Sweden, and my life was just turning, like taking an 180-degree turn. I was married at the time, and I was thinking of maybe, you know, this wasn't the right thing, and I was changing careers. And, you know, I come from a corporate background, and I don't know, all the things that I thought I knew about myself, I was like, actually, I know nothing about what I like, what kind of music I like, what I like doing. And I was so externally focused on like pleasing and being the best in various areas of my life. And then somebody told me, oh, you have to love yourself. And I was like, literally, what does that mean? Like, and I asked this girl, like, how do you do it? You know, because you sound so confidently, you're saying like, you know how to do it. So how do you do it? Like, do I take myself out on a date? Do I write myself letters? Like, what does that look like? I'm a very practical person. So, clearly, like, give me the activities. Yeah. And she just, like, brushed it off and walked away. So throughout the years, I've been just reading a lot about self-love. And oftentimes, it is actually, like, motivated by, you know, love relationships. Like, obviously, having, you know, gone through this huge disappointment or disillusionment that was disillusion, that was the divorce, and you know, like, what do I believe in anymore, you know, like, and even in my word, I think that was the thing with getting divorced. It's like I told someone that I would be with them forever, and now I'm asking for a divorce. Like, how can I ever trust my word again? What can I trust about myself? And that was a very lonely journey that I didn't really know how to navigate. And I think the first answer that I had was storytelling. So I did a storytelling training as part of this long term, like this 10-month program that I was doing in Sweden. And I thought, firstly, it was such a silly thing. Like, who cares about stories? You know, they're just childish, playful things. But some of the stories that I learned then really spoke to my heart and kind of gave me answers to questions that I was scared of posing to people, and I didn't know how to have those conversations. And the stories were kind of the dialogue that I started having. But I think after, you know, I feel like I've graduated from loving myself, and it doesn't mean it's over, and I think it's an exciting journey, but right now I feel comfortable having these conversations with other people and you know, asking them questions and sharing exercises that I do. And the co-loving community is a lot about that. It's like little challenges and games and authentic conversations about where we're at each week.
And it's a community, right? I mean, that's the key.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And the power within that, because I think that realizing and being around people that makes you feel less weird about yourself, and realizing that there are other people going through those things too. Because I mean, I can imagine with divorce, it must feel like failure.
I wonder if it was failure. Yeah, maybe. I don't know if failure was the word. It was just like, and not knowing where to trust. It was just like a groundlessness. And it took me some years, right? So I got divorced in 2013. And I think the moment that I really made peace with it was when I was in Greece, and I bought this necklace to symbolize my marriage to myself. You know, I was like, I really want to commit to you. I'm so grateful that you brought us here, you know, because it was a very much like passion, beauty trip that I did to Paris and Greece and a few other places in 2018. Like, I just wanted to dance, and I wanted to go to Greece because it was beautiful. It was like that, you know. Allowing myself that little frivolous, joyful experience. And I'm sitting there with this necklace, glancing at the water. And I'm pondering about until death does us apart, right? And I didn't even say my vows in English, but that thing was like, you know, because my ex-husband is French. I don't know. I probably said stuff to him, and I think we did it in Portuguese and French. But that concept was just so strong. And then I was thinking about this concept of death, and I thought, oh my gosh, you know. And then I thought of like Joseph Campbell and all these like mythology and these ideas of like deaths that we have, like death of identity
several times.
Yeah, so I thought, geez, I nailed it. Like, yes,
solved it.
I asked for the divorce when it died. Like, I died. The relationship, like the realness and the aliveness that was there, like, wasn't any longer.
Also the identity, I imagine, that entered into that.
Yeah. So I think oftentimes people associate or ask me you know, did that feel like a failure? And I could never authentically say, like, I don't remember a time that it felt like a failure. I think it was like, it really did work. Like, I don't regret it. You know, it was such a beautiful part of my life. And it worked for so many things. Like, it worked as a relationship for some time, but then it also worked. Gosh, I think every time I look back at my marriage, I'm like, I was so naive and I was so immature. And like, I can take responsibility for so many things that I didn't even, you know, like,
yeah,
at the
yeah,
time.
Yeah.
I think when I got divorced, I was so angry and it was all my husband's fault. And like, you know, even the divorce is like, when I asked for the divorce, right? Like, I kind of was expecting that he would fight back and he would just say, you know, he would just fly to Sweden and say, you know, what's this bullshit? Like, no ways. Like, I'm not going to accept this. And he didn't. And he just said, okay.
Wow.
And that was such a disappointment.
Did that shock you?
I think it didn't, because it was the idea that I had of him, right? So
okay.
We create these, you know, personas for people in our lives.
Yeah.
And I thought that kind of just was the last drop. Like, I think a couple of things were the last drop. It kind of felt like I took a lot of control over the relationship, and I did. And then I blamed him for not stepping up to a bunch of things. And that was just one more example that I had to blame him for, right? It's just like, there he goes, not stepping up again, you know? So obviously, we always win with our arguments, right?
Like, yeah, like we're very good at convincing ourselves.
And we defend realities that aren't working for us.
Yep. Every day.
So I was great at that in my 20s. I think I was 25 when I got divorced. And like, dealing with that, you know, in my late 20s and like even in the beginning of my 30s now, it's, I just feel so much compassion. Like, I feel so much compassion for him and what he was dealing with and for, you know, his way of showing up in the world and for myself and what I didn't know and what I, you know, the conversations that I couldn't have at that time. I think that was crucial. And that's also what I'm excited about, you know, learning together and sharing experiences with people. It's like, I don't know, if we can just feel comfortable with parts of ourselves that aren't beautiful, that aren't, you know, shiny. And if we can sit with that, and if we can sit with somebody saying, you know, you're just a jerk, like, are you a bitch? And if you can sit with that and you're like, yeah, you might be right. You know, like, in some circumstances, like, I can find that in myself.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, like, that's nothing new. You know, just say something new and, like, let's have an interesting conversation. Or the same when somebody says, you know, like, you're absolutely amazing. Like, I've never met anybody like you. You're like, that's also not new. I think that's what's so powerful in the self-love journey, right? It's like, you know, all the little corners of yourself, you know, like, you know, the things you might not be so proud of, or you might, you know, have some weak spots, or you have
sure.
like really strong spots, that it doesn't tip you over when somebody is upset.
Yes.
It doesn't tip you over when... It doesn't seduce you either when somebody knows like throwing the red carpet in front of you and you're like, yes, thank you, I like this. And it doesn't mean I'm going to do anything differently to keep that coming.
Yeah. Are you familiar with Esther Perel?
I know the name sounds familiar. Tell me more and it's going to refresh my memory.
Amazing. I'm not going to wax lyrical about Esther Perel, but what does come up is... she draws a very good, well, in short, she's a relationship counselor. Essentially, well, that's how she started. Now she's become, I mean, you can find her on TED Talks and all sorts of stuff. And she bears naked truth about, mostly about infidelities and how relationships either make, break, or transcend through infidelities. But what is fascinating is that she talks about our unrealistic expectations of relationships. So if we go back to a time, say 100 years ago, you've heard the adage of it takes a village to raise a child. Mm-hmm. In a similar way, we had access to what was a village at the time, where you would have a best friend to confide in, you would have a matriarch or a patriarch to seek advice and guidance from, and then you would have your husband or wife that you would then have, you know, you would see them both as nurturer, carer, protector, lover, etc. But in modern times, we tend to throw all of those roles into one individual. And so it's not really surprising that they invariably, that either we or they invariably end up disappointing us, because they cannot possibly fulfill all of those roles. Mm-hmm. And then over time, maintain the level of excitement. But this should be exciting. This should be interesting.
And you should make it.
Right. And you should find me sexy. And we should be here. Why aren't we here? What is going on? And I think at the core of it, serving what is this, and you touched on it earlier, which is the external, that the relationship is always this external almost entity and organic being that we need to constantly serve and check in with and protect, rather than looking at the reflections that we bring and put in and out. Yeah,
and what comes up for me, like listening to that, is just being able to survive these experiences, right? Like going through them, because I think what happens, or like what happened for me, was trying to gain these things in life that would make me happy, right? So I had this vision of becoming the CEO of an American company and marrying like somebody that I'm crazy about. And I was on that road, right? Like I had married somebody that I was really, really crazy about. And I was working in international businesses in Brazil, with the potential to, you know, to actually go to the States. And I just wasn't happy. And I thought, oh gosh, it isn't this. And so what now? And that's what led me to Sweden to do this social entrepreneurship program, which was really about, you know, how to change the world. And I thought, who talks about how to change the world? Like, as an adult, like, for real, this is like...
Sweden, man. They came up with IKEA. they have manuals of these things.
And I thought it was, you know, it really spoke to something real inside of me. And I thought, I have to follow this. But as I started to follow this inner guidance, this voice, the source, whatever you call it, you know, everything else that wasn't real started falling apart, and I didn't know if I was gonna make it. Like, I remember that, you know, thinking whether to get divorced or not. Like, I didn't know how I was gonna make it, and it felt so lonely because I was away from Brazil, but also like my family didn't quite understand what was going on with me, and I felt really embarrassed about all the circumstances, and I really kept everything to myself. But afterwards, it's like, well, this shouldn't break me, you know? And it's like, I don't know, there's almost like an excitement. And actually, I want to tell a little piece of a story.
Please.
So this was the story, actually, the first story that I learned in my storytelling training. And what actually happened is, like, we arrived one day, and on the first day, there were all these papers spread out on the floor. You know, and you couldn't see what they were about. But the teacher said, you know, you have to look on the floor and pick something, pick a story that you're going to present to everybody at the end of the week. And I picked something, and the name of the story was Yonjua Seeks a Bride. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I wasn't exactly laughing then, but I was like, you gotta be kidding me, right? And I think I was so shocked. I didn't immediately like had it in me to just put the paper back on the floor and search for something else. And by the time that I did cross my mind, everybody else had picked up a paper, so there was nothing left. And I remember just like being really serious, and I was really serious back then. And obviously, you know, you're going through a divorce. I was particularly upset with life. And I called the teacher on the side and I said, you know, I can't tell this story. Like, and he said, well, let's have a chat, you know, at the break. So I'm like really getting nervous about this, and I've got like the good student in me. It's just like, well, how am I going to deal with this? And I come to him and I say, you don't understand. I just can't tell this story. And he was like, well, what's going on? I said, well, I'm going through a divorce right now. Like, I actually just told my husband that I want a divorce. And this was just last week, and I can't tell this story. And he says, the story is always right. The story chose you. And I was like, oh, come on. Like, I hate these people. Like, he recited some kind of like Rumi or Hafiz at the time. Yeah, I think it was Rumi. It was just like, you have to keep breaking your heart until it opens, but something
along
that,
those
yeah.
lines.
And anyway,
it's just the shit that you just don't want to hear
exactly.
in that moment. Right?
No,
it's like, no,
there is a time for that stuff.
Yeah.
That wasn't the time.
Exactly.
And anyways, I wrestled with that goddamn story the whole week. And the story was a wrestling story, right? So it's this young, vibrant man who's the leader of a tribe, who's about the age that he needs to get married, and he's looking for a wife. But he's not just going to marry anybody. Like, he wants a strong, big, powerful woman. And you know, everybody goes out to try and find this woman, and they do a miserable job. So he decides, you know, it's his life. He's going to go after her. And he's walking on the road one day, and he sees this fellow, like, looking pretty miserable, like, dripping down some kind of oil. And he asks the guy, excuse me, but what happened to you? And the man, you know, just shakes his head and says, you don't even want to know about this. And there is this woman. She's so big and so beautiful. And she's this wrestler. But what did I have in mind? To, like, you know, in order to marry her, you have to wrestle her. And, you know, he didn't have to hear anything else. He just, like, thanked the man and just went in the direction where the man was coming from. And sure enough, he stumbles upon this other village and he sees this circle of beautiful women, right? Like, all of them beautiful. And there is one that really stands out, and turns out she's the famous wrestler. And he goes around telling her, you know, like, I came here to marry you today. And everybody's like, who's this guy? You know, go talk to the elders, you know, go talk to the father. And come
wait
back
your turn,
to come,
wait your turn.
Yeah, come back tomorrow. And he's like, no, I'm not coming back tomorrow. I came here to marry you today. And everybody's just very puzzled about who this man is. As I'm reading this story, I'm also just like, there's a part of me who's a little bit like that woman, you know, it's just like, kind of hopeful, this is the guy, like, this is a powerful guy. And then kind of just thinking of all the stories and all the wrestles that I've won over a man, that I'm also like, don't want to keep my hopes too high. And so she like plays it down, and eventually, you know, they arrange this pitch of palm oil because the father has palm plantations and whatnot, and, you know, we're not going to discuss the sustainability aspects of this right now.
The orangutans.
But they come together, and what happens is, you know, he's just dazzled by her. She's so beautiful, and that's not enough. Like, she goes and, like, she picks up some oil with her palms and, like, puts it all over her body. And this guy's just thinking, this is like the luckiest day of his life already. Like, no matter what happens, he's won. But then, the fight starts and he goes for her, but he can't take a grip on her because she's so slippery. And she actually, like, grabs him and lifts him up and, like, just throws him in the pit of oil. Like, just like this. And then everybody else just goes, you know, like, here's goes, you know, another promising guy. And then everybody hears this guy laughing. Like, he just comes out of the pit of palm oil and just, like, stands up again, like, laughing. And everybody's confused. Like, what's, dude, you just lost. Like, what's going on? And he's just ready, you know, to keep going. And this has never happened before. And the woman's kind of like taken back by this. And he comes for her and he actually like presses his arms over her shoulder and like goes down into the pit of olive, like palm oil all the way with her. And nobody knows what's going on. And they look at each other, and in that moment, he actually like grabs her and lifts her and throws her in the pit of palm oil. And you know, then the story goes, you know, finally a man is strong enough to marry me. Finally, a woman strong enough to marry me. And you know, that's why I hated that story. I was like, this is a lie. Like, I can't go on stage and like say that there is a strong man for a strong woman. It's like either the one or the other. You know, either the man is strong or either the woman's strong. That's kind of what I grew up in at home. You know, that's kind of the vision that I had. And I thought, I'm not going to be the weak one. So I was always this woman, like, exerting this power over men. It's exactly what I was doing in my marriage. But at the time, I was still, like, frustrated with my husband. And he should have done just like the guy. Why did I tell him I wanted to get a divorce and he just accepted defeat? He should have like stood up and like, you know, continued fighting. And a few days into that week, I realized, oh, wait a minute. What if I'm the guy in the story? You know, what if this beautiful wrestler, what if that's life, right? And she just threw me in the oil. And right now I have the choice. Like, I have the choice to, like, walk out of here with my head down and, you know, think I failed. Or I can just stand up laughing and say, you know, show me. I want to see what you got. What do you have next? Mm. Like, I'm enjoying this.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Yeah. Sure. Sure.
That's and the power of storytelling. That was like, well, that's...
And it's as old as time. It's the way that we've conveyed everything, you know. Whether it's a man with a big boat saving us from floods or whether it's... There are those stories too, which we won't go into.
True.
So everything changed, I can imagine, from that point, right?
Yeah, and I think, you know, just developing that stamina and learning to enjoy the fight. You know, I'm a dancer, so like...
We're going to get into that,
like,
in a second.
Learning to move with what comes. I think that's exciting today. And I think that's another metaphor for me, right? Like, why dancing Brazilian? You know, like, why dance? I think if we can have that attitude to really be present with what's happening in front of us and not how it happened in the past,
right?
You know, like, not how everybody else is dealing with the situation, which is just acting like this is a defeat, like a divorce is a defeat. It's like, it's nothing. It's whatever we make it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think that it is, that's exactly right. And it's unfortunate that it is initially seen as that it's a failure. I fucked it up and I can't go back. I can't go back. I can't change it. There's nothing I can do now to go back and sort of change that outcome. And it is unfortunate that's how. So again, with a co-loving community, I think it's the most beautiful thing that you can facilitate an environment where it's not a shameful thing, that it's actually seen as a stepping stone and into, you know, better things.
Yeah, and a lot of people just learn by speaking it out, right? I think I know journaling is a great practice for, you know, the writer in you. I like to think I'm a singer, you know, I just composed a song. I'm definitely somebody who likes to talk it out. So in the talking, I make sense of things. So for somebody to be able to say what they're struggling with, you know, and we cover things like mental health, and we cover things like polyamory, and we cover things like, I'm just so fed up with this work, I'm gonna call it quit. oh, guys, I just got a raise, you know, because I stood up for myself and I'm drained today. Like, I'm actually not going to show up for the call because I'm just feeling miserable. Like, to be able to, it's such a gift when somebody says that.
Absolutely.
You're like, hey.
Yeah.
It gives you permission to do the same, you know?
Exactly. So talk to me, talk to those who are listening about where this co-loving group exists and how does one participate, join, interact, engage with?
Yeah, so we do our meetings online. Thanks. You know, it's one of the blessings of
thank you,
the
COVID.
Times we're living in.
Thank you, COVID.
But also it's an international community. So in a sense, it's great because we get to connect people from Europe and the States. Yeah. And we haven't had Brazilians there yet.
No, you're one. You're one.
Exactly. You're right. I'm still Brazilian. I'm still Brazilian.
Yes.
Okay, I'm representing.
Yes.
South Africans. And we do our meetings both on WhatsApp and Zoom.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Yeah, so we get to check in regularly on a WhatsApp group. And we do regular co-loving sessions on Zoom. And we also do authentic relating games. So at least once a month, we get to invite some of our friends or family members, people that we want to introduce to co-loving, to play some games. And it's a very special way to, it's almost like happy hour. It's almost like going for a beer with somebody. Open up a beer in your living room and join us. But it's, yeah, like questions and like playful cues to get to know somebody straight away. And how, I think the best way to register for it, so if you go on my Instagram, which is Dancing Brazilian, the link in my bio is a link to book a call with me. And then there are some options and we can talk about co-loving or some of the other things that I do.
Yeah, well, definitely I'll post all of those links, when we publish this. And put it out on all the socials so people know how to find you. That's such a wonderful thing. I think, what comes up for me, a very good friend, the same friend who married the Swede, in fact, started a little thing a few years ago called One Year No Beer. And One Year No Beer is a fun way to say you have possibly an unhealthy relationship with alcohol, and One Year No Beer can help you improve that relationship with alcohol. It's now exploded into a worldwide thing, and I think, hundreds of thousands of members, and it's going really well. But I think the key to it was that it was creating pre-COVID, but creating this community that could exist and connect people from all over the world with one another who shared that one thing, which is that they want a better relationship with alcohol for whatever the purpose was. It might be to have a better relationship with their wife or their husband or their kids or their work or better physical health or whatever their ambition or their personal motivation might have been. The not falling off along the way was the most important thing. Yeah, well done. So how many members in co-loving right now?
We're a small group right now, so...
So there's room for more.
Yeah, what I've noticed is like people that are people that do well with co-loving are people that are extremely curious about other people, right? Like that have this in them, like relentless. Yes,
there you go.
Thank you. Kind of with asking questions or going out to people and, you know, asking who they are. So really curious about each other. Also people with very good communication skills, who can articulate what they're feeling, what they're dealing with, you know, can take responsibility for that. So it's like a very particular type of qualities as well. So the people that come and stay, the people that come and have stayed are, just fully committed to self-love, like fully invested in self-love, like right now. And, you know, we're all invested in self-love in some capacity, but, you know, 0 out of 10, they're on a 10 right now. This is their moment to focus. And who were very, you know, giving to other people to say, hey, that's amazing. Or, you know, who really like commenting and celebrating each other's wins.
That's wonderful.
We're growing slowly, and I think that's deliberate.
Yes.
Yeah.
Organic is good.
And because it requires a lot. So I've turned people down as well. So anybody's welcome to book a time to talk about it if you're interested. Like, please come along and let's chat. But sometimes it's not the right time or it's not the right fit. And I'm super happy to recommend people to other programs
Which is really important as the facilitator and as the host. It's you're the gatekeeper.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a very safe space for people to share and explore who they are. And yeah, that's what makes it so special.
That's beautiful. I think we're going to probably wrap it here and reserve some time if you'll come back to talk some more on another occasion. But that was amazing. Thank you so much.
Oh, such a pleasure.
Like I said, I'm going to post all the links when we publish this episode and share it far and wide. And I really look forward to having you back very soon. Eloise, thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah. Awesome. And thanks to everybody who are listening. Like, thanks for your time. And
I'm going to plant the seed again. We had this conversation before, but I'm definitely going to plant the seed that, yes, you need a podcast of your own.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Awesome. Thanks so much for listening, guys. Please like, share, subscribe, and we hope to we'll see you guys soon. Thanks so much.
Cheers.
And that was another podcast episode from the people of the Costry. Please tell your friends and give us a liquor rating wherever you get your podcasts.